Welcome to the Power of Love Show, sponsored by the Dede Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Enjoy the show. Welcome to the Power of Love Show, sponsored by the Dede Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. My name is TJ Jackson, and with me is my eldest brother, Taj Jackson. How are you doing, Taj?
What's going on, T? How are you doing, buddy?
I am excellent. For those who may be watching, we are live, of course, on Facebook and YouTube, but you also may be listening to us via the podcast. We want to thank all of you for watching, engaging, for spreading the news about the power of love. Without you, this show is not possible. So a big thank you to each and every one of you who support the Dede Jackson Foundation. Now, we are not licensed therapists. We are just ordinary people who've experienced loss in our lives. We've been impacted by it. And we like to think that we have learned from it. Saying that, we urge you to find professional help if you think you need help. Please do not just rely on us. Taj Jackson, that was a derivative of our intro.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Wasn't bad, right?
Yeah.
Taj, I can't believe it's already May 31st. The sixth month of the year starts tomorrow. I think it's the beginning, actual technical beginning of the summer as well, I want to say. Was yesterday. I don't know. But anyways, how is the year flying by the way it is? It's crazy.
I don't know. It does seem like it's, I mean, you look at the month and you're like, yeah, definitely it's been flying by. It seems like it too, though, in a way. Yeah. It doesn't.
You know, I have to say I'm proud of myself, and I'm going to brag for a minute.
This is the
first year that I've really, really kind of, well, not the first year, but the first year in a long time where I've kind of made sure I put myself as a priority. And right. I have to say it's been a very beautiful revelation. It's been a very great experience. And Taj, I know you're in a little bit different situation. You have two youngsters that this year, next year, the year after is probably not the year for you to do this, but my youngest is now 8, and I've been able to kind of refocus time and energy into myself. And I say all this not to brag, although that did sound like I was bragging. I just said, can I brag for a minute? But really to remind all of you out there who may be listening or watching to remember that, you know, we cannot be the best person we can be for others unless we take care of ourselves and improve ourselves. So please do not neglect your health. Do not neglect your mind. Do not neglect what you need. It's super, super important that you take care of yourself so that you could be the best person you can for your entire family. And I to bring my whole comment full circle, this has been the first year in probably 2 decades or more that I've done that. And it's been a beautiful thing. So I just want to remind people to contemplate doing that and to let you know if you are going to be doing that, that is perfectly fine. And in a way, it's very, very healthy for you and your family. So,
yeah.
Now, with all that said, Taj, I'll let you brainstorm or talk about anything else you wanted to talk about. And I won't make it an inspiration or self-help type of thing. Was there a movie you watched or saw or anything that is going on in your life that's interesting or exciting?
I saw Dune recently. I had missed it in the theater. So
wait a second. Isn't that like a year old?
Yeah. And so I made a promise to a cousin that I wouldn't see it just on video or on TV. And then I would have to see it in the theater. So we went to go see it in the theater, which is really great because they replayed it. So it was really cool.
Interesting.
So that was my first time seeing it, basically.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I loved it. It was great. Yeah.
Okay.
And I don't have to
wait. Is that the one where they filmed the second one already?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I think they filmed the second one. It's coming out in November. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Taj, anything else you want to share before we get on with our special great show?
Look, I'll mimic you with the self-care and all that stuff. you know, I'm approaching 50, so I've been doing a lot of like going to doctors and stuff like that, and just checkups and stuff. But luckily, nothing bad has happened in that way, or no bad news or whatever. But you have to you just always have to take care of yourself, and there's always stuff you can do better in that way.
I'm actually very happy you shared that, Taj, because I touched on ways to improve yourself, but you touched on another way that a lot of people are afraid to do. We're afraid of bad news, or no, we're not going to like numbers or what the doctor may have to tell us. But it's important to make sure you are taking care of yourself and getting checkups. So I really appreciate you sharing that, because too often, especially when we get to our age and, you know, the middle life area, we start thinking that, you know, we're not as important, or we say we'll do it next month or next year or whatever. And time is probably the most important thing to help save someone's life, or, you know, so please make sure you get on your own things and get your checkups. Great point.
Yeah. Very important.
Taj Jackson, anything else we need to share on May 31st, 2023, which is today's date, before we get on with our special show?
No, I'm excited about the show today.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to get into the intro. On today's episode of the Power of Love show, we welcome a special guest. Her name is Jessica C. Guthrie. I should have asked, Jessica. Oh, I'm sorry. You're going to have to fix it. Correct me.
You didn't ask.
Actually, it's Guthrie. It's Guthrie. Yeah. It's Guthrie. You know why I know it's Guthrie? Because I think there was a baseball player on the A's that I liked. Anyways, Jessica is an only child and the full-time caregiver of her mother, Constance Guthrie, who is living with Alzheimer's disease. Jessica, a single millennial, started caring for her mother at 26 years old and has navigated the journey alone, all the while balancing the building of her own career, caring for herself, and preserving her mother's dignity and legacy. For the first 4 years of this disease, Jessica was a long-distance caregiver, traveling from her mom in Virginia to her home and job in Dallas, Texas. And in 2019, she made the difficult yet necessary decision to move back home to fully support her mother as she began to decline in her disease. Jessica created When Career and Caregiving Collide to open share the realities of what it meant to be a young person starting in their career, all the while being thrust into the responsibility of caring for a parent, and, of course, how to balance both. When she started her journey, she didn't see leaders, groups, organizations of people that looked like her, nor were they sharing a similar experience. So she desired to uplift her story so many others could feel seen and affirmed on this unique journey too. Jessica is now a senior executive nonprofit leader and grew her career while caring intensely for her mom. It's possible to have both a thriving career and thrive as a caregiver. When speaking of her role as a caregiver, Jessica says, "I consider it not just a responsibility, but the utmost privilege that I get to care for my mother on this journey through Alzheimer's disease. She cared for me to ensure I had the greatest access, resources, and experiences growing up. Now it is my turn to do the very same for her. Caring for her is an active and intentional choice I make every single day." Her mother experienced a significant decline in her disease at the beginning of 2022, no longer ambulatory, fully incontinent, weight loss, diminished speech, and unable to feed herself. On May 16, 2022, Jessica enrolled her mother into home hospice with the strong belief she would pass within 6 months or less. Today, May 31, 2023, Jessica's mother is still alive. She has graduated from hospice and is thriving in the current stage she is in. Jessica attributes her mother's strength and energy to fight to the love and care between the two of them. She intentionally slowed down, got super proximate and present with her mom, and prioritized all the moments. Jessica is grateful for what she calls magic time and makes the most of each day. When she's not at home singing with her mom, meal prepping, or transporting her mom using her Hoyer lift, you can find Jessica at the local YMCA teaching a dance fitness class. here today to discuss a bit about her work. Without much further ado, please welcome the one and only Jessica Guthrie to the Power of Love show. Jessica, first of all, my apologies for butchering your name the first time. But I got it right every other time, right?
You did. It's Guthrie. You are correct.
Okay. Jessica, I'm not sure you know, but I will want to share this. We Alzheimer runs pretty heavily in our mother's side of the family. My mother was actually, her life was taken from her before she turned 40 at 39. But Todd, correct me, two of her sisters out of four. Go ahead, Todd. You want to take, I know grandma my passed from Alzheimer's. There, yeah,
my mom's eldest sister passed from Alzheimer's. The middle one, Lourdes, is diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and their mother, our grandma, died from Alzheimer's. So it runs strong on the female side of that of our family. So we're very aware of it.
We're very aware, and we just want to commend you for all the challenging decisions you had to make and are making and the fight you're fighting. And it's not an easy thing by no means. So just want to commend you on that. Now, my first question is, I'm going to ask, what range of emotions did you experience when you first learned of your mom's diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, especially with the fact that you were long distance, you were in Texas and she's in Virginia. So what kind of emotions were you experiencing, Jessica?
Yeah. So thank you both for having me. I'm excited to chat with you all today. Yeah. So in terms of my emotions, I was 26 years old, very young. I had, graduated from college and I had taught for 2 years in Texas. So I was like in the very beginning stages of figuring out like who was Jessica as an adult living away from home. And I had been noticing that she was forgetting things. And so in my this stage of like noticing into diagnosis was very much high problem solving mode. I would say I was like a highly functioning and like anxious person. I was go, go, go mode because I wanted to figure out what was happening to my mom. And so I say this because I don't think I actually took the time to feel at the very beginning of this because I was so focused on what's happening, what's the solution, what are now going to be my next steps, what systems do I need to put in place, right? Like it was just I need to make sure I preserve her dignity. I need to make sure I keep her afloat. The image has to be that she is okay on the outside. And so that was my initial just like mental and emotional state. But the thing I didn't actually talk about early on was just how sad I felt, how lonely it was. The sleepless nights, the insomnia, the not feeling as if other people understood. And what I didn't know, 9 years ago is that those were all signs of grief. Like I was experiencing grief and didn't know what to call it, but I felt this heavy burden that was like weighing on me. And the emotional toll of that, which I thought like, geez, Jessica, no one understands, not realizing that so many people were also carrying their own forms of loss and grief.
Mm. So, Todd, are you going to say something? Are you just moving?
When you went into that first mode and, because you were describing, is that just because that's how you always do approach everything? So you went right to instinct of like problem solving and.
Yeah. I'm an only child. My mom's a single mom. My mother was an entrepreneur. We are like highly independent, very driven people. I was also a teacher. I taught high school. And so it was all about systems routines. And so I knew that I didn't live here, but I knew I needed to make sure my mom was safe and okay. And so I was like, okay, I don't know anything about Alzheimer's disease. No one really knows anything about Alzheimer's disease. And so what I do know is how to like create the routines and systems so that I can control as much as I can in all the things that I can't control.
Now, being an only child, I mean, I had my brothers, you know, with the loss of my mother as well as the loss of my grandmother to Alzheimer's. You know, we had each other, which helps, because, you know, we always talk about how one of the most challenging part of loss is feeling alone. You often feel like it's just you. Although I did experience that, I also knew my brothers were there going through a similar situation that I had to go through. But in your case, you know, you're an only child. So my question is, where did you turn for support after your mom's diagnosis? And was it immediately clear that you would be your mother's caregiver?
You know, family members, they're really quick to jump on the bandwagon when it's like, let's find out what's wrong with Connie. Let's find out what the issue is. But they weren't very quick to jump on the, and I'll also help you take care of her train, right? And that's what I experienced. It was the, what's wrong with your mom? Like, let's get this set up, you know? But then when it came down to it, it was me. And I was living thousands of miles away. And so because I grew up the way that I did, for me, and not everyone's like this, but for me, there was no question that I would take care of my mom, right? Because she sacrificed so much for me. She gave up her business. We moved to the suburbs so I could have a good education. Like, she did everything to make sure that I could be the best possible person. Therefore, I didn't see any other option to not do that for her. Furthermore, right, like, she was a working class woman. We didn't have any money for me to send her anywhere else. And so it was like, you have to do this. Yeah. So both the realities and just the feeling so connected to her. In terms of who did I turn to, you know, to be honest, my family wasn't like the type of people who would reach out or check in on me. But I would say, like, I had close friends and colleagues at work who watched all of this unfold in real time, who were there for me. I would also say, you know, therapy early on, having someone just to talk this through with that wasn't connected to you. But I'll say the hardest thing is that at 26, I didn't see my peers navigating this. I didn't see young folks like me talking about caring for an aging loved one, let alone like traveling and spending hundreds of dollars every month to get back and forth to their parent. Like, they were planning vacations. They were preparing for investment portfolios. And so I actually, the first couple years, I went inward because I was like, no one gets it. I didn't see people who looked like me sharing their story publicly.
That's a very powerful thing. I think for some, it can break them, and some they can rise up and just accept the challenge and you know, take it one day at a time. And it sounds like you did the latter. And I commend you, because like I said, I had my brothers. I don't know what it would have been like to, and especially with Alzheimer's. I mean, it was just a wild experience for me as a teen to watch this, you know, because you at 26, I mean, I was, I think 15, 16 when we learned about our grandmother, but that was my kind of introduction to Alzheimer's and dementia, was seeing the deterioration from going from someone who knew your name and knew who you were to not even knowing who we were. And it's like, every time we would go and visit her, we had to kind of reintroduce ourselves and share things. And then when our mother's life was taken, you know, answer the very difficult questions over and over to her mother, because she would keep forgetting. And it was just a wild experience. But the point I'm making is, we had each other who went through it. So I have nothing but respect and admiration for you, who sounds like kind of went through it on your own. I mean, like you said, you had some friends and a therapist therapy sessions that you would go to where you could talk it out a bit, but doing it on your own, I can't even imagine. So the first thing is bow down to you, Jessica. And it just shows how strong of a person and how resilient you are. So just respect there. Now, I would love for you, if possible, if you could walk us through how you've navigated this new territory of being a caregiver. You said you were a teacher, and all of a sudden you're now, you know, a caregiver. But I would love to know, you know, everything from the healthcare system and the hidden costs of caregiving. And what advice would you offer to a new caregiver who is setting out on this journey and uncertain where to begin?
Okay, so where to begin? The first thing I'll say is you actually aren't alone. And I say this first because I think oftentimes, especially as caregivers of loved ones with forms of dementia, you think that no one gets it, no one understands, and that, you know, your friends and your family aren't going to show up for you. And like, yes, there are the one-off examples. However, what I wish I would have done at the very beginning of this would have been to like sit my family down, sit people close to me down and say, this is what I am about to embark on. I don't have all the answers. I don't know everything that's going to happen. However, this is how I want you all to be a part of this journey. Mm-hmm. And so I think maybe the first step is like, get your people, get your community in place. Even if you don't know what you need yet, that's okay. But the more people understand that you're embarking on this, the more people will be open to helping you and will be able to help you, right? I think the second thing in terms of navigating the systems, gosh, I mean, any disease, terminal illness is terrible. I would say Alzheimer's is one of the worst because it could, it's a long death, right? We've been on this journey for nine years now, right? And at the beginning of this, my mom is walking around talking. My mom still worked for the first year of this, right? Like, and so you go through a number of changes and chapters and experiences. I say that to say, as a caregiver, whether you are long distance or proximate living with your loved one, go ahead and get a journal and start documenting everything. Because from a memory standpoint, you want to remember the things that happen, but from a medical standpoint and navigating the system, you want to know exactly how was loved one X operating in from month A to month C, right? Because you need to be able to tell the story of what's happening, and no one's going to know that but you. Doctors, yes, they have the degrees, they don't know nothing. Okay, they don't know anything about Alzheimer's disease that's impacting your loved one. And so you have to be ready to advocate and speak up for what your loved one is experiencing. And you do that by literally documenting. I think the third piece of advice, if you're just starting this, is do not shy away from asking for what you need, right? And it might be, I'm going to ask this series of questions so that you walk away from whatever doctor's appointment with more information than you need. I think too often I walked in at the beginning being like, oh, well, I trust the doctor. I trust the medical system. They're going to help me out. And it's like, if you don't go in and you're not clear about the things that you're noticing or the questions that you have, you leave just as empty as you walked in. And no one benefits from that. And so part of your job as a caregiver is to put on your advocate hat and be ready to not only ask the questions, be ready to challenge and be like, can you tell me why? I'm curious, why are we on this medication? Or what might this medication do for us? Or what might be the side effects of that? Right? Like, you need to put your investigator, Curious George hat on as like an early caregiver. And then finally, what I'll say is that there is no shame in being just honest and vulnerable. I think in the early years, I tried to hide it because my mom was such a proud, independent woman. It was like, yeah, I got this. Like, she's losing weight rapidly, but I'm buying new clothes. You can't tell, right? Like, oh, she's forgetting to eat, but I'm meal prepping 50 meals, you know, every time I'm home to make sure she's eating. But did I let people into the realities of how difficult this was? No. And because I didn't, I don't think that people were able to show up for me, like, emotionally in the way that I probably needed 8 years ago. I mean, that time has passed. I'm a different person now, but I would offer that to anyone starting their journey now.
Fantastic. Fantastic advice and everything. Thank you so much, Jessica. Taj, you want to say something?
Quick question. In terms of, because, I mean, I can't imagine the strength that it takes in that. What kept you going in terms of, you know, not being so overwhelmed, because I know I have a friend that's going through that journey right now as a caregiver, and she's mm-hmm. been thrust into that. And I just, it's, you know, I'm amazed at her strength, but I just wanted, what kept you going in that? Because it is something that is so overwhelming in that.
I think the first thing was to realize that my mom is still here. Mm-hmm. My mom is still living. My mother is still there. And choosing to see the moments of joy, choosing to see her when her personality, you know, pops out. For up until last year, my mom was walking, talking, gossiping and everything. And so I would make sure to like be present in those moments. So what kept me going was like seeing the glimpses of who my mom used to be, even in the midst of her decline, or forgetting, you know, what we did 2 minutes ago. I also think what keeps me going is that, like, and this is just my story, but yeah. I recognize that my mother sacrificed everything. And I said, you know, if she could do that for me, given the space that I'm currently in, I can absolutely do that for her, because I recognize it's just a season. This ain't my whole life. I'm not going to be a caregiver forever. And so I believe that I need to show up and like continue showing up even on the hard days, because I know that this season is just temporary. And I need to like enjoy and be present in this moment. Now, does that mean I had a child? I've cried, I've yelled, I've broken things, right? The whole journey of anger and frustration is there. Mm-hmm. But I see something greater. And it's that like my mom deserves the best in the limited window that I do have with her.
Got it.
Well said, and it's a beautiful thing. Yeah. We've said this in the intro, and I think we've even talked about it since then, but you were just 26 years old when you found out your mother's diagnosis. You know, obviously you were establishing a place in the workforce, and slowly advancing your career in a whole nother state. So my question is, how have you found balance in your career and caregiving at the same time?
Balance is relative. I don't think it's ever like equal, right? I recognize the both the privilege and just the experience that I've had in my organization. So I work for an education nonprofit, and we're very social justice oriented. So like we were already at the forefront of what does it mean to talk around like equity and experience of people in the workplace, right? So I name that. However, things that worked for me was because my colleagues and I'll tell you this, we were at a staff retreat and I got the phone call from my mother's principal because she worked in education at the time. And in that phone call, he said, "We're concerned about your mother. What's wrong with her?" And it was that phone call where I had to say, you know, I believe my mother has early onset Alzheimer's disease. And he said it without saying, but he's like, "Your mother can no longer work here." And I'll never forget being literally in the pantry of like our staff retreat, just breaking down, crying. And who was there? None other than my direct boss and our executive director. And I say this story because I got to experience the early stages of this with my colleagues and my work coworkers, like right next to me, which opened up the doors to greater empathy. Being able to see me as a human navigating a really big experience and not just someone showing up to work, clocking a punch card, right? And so I think the first just thing that worked for me, allowing me to be able to do both, was being open and honest about the realities of what I was experiencing. I think once I got more clear about, you know, balancing the two, I was also able to say, these are the boundaries I need to put into place. Like I can't work X, Y, and Z hours. I need to make sure that I am available for my mother at these windows of time. Can like I plan my schedule around that? And all that was always yes. I think the other thing here is that what I often see in the workplace is people make assumptions. Oh, because you're a caregiver, you can't do this. Oh, well, she's got that responsibility, so we're not going to ask her. And I would say I've been able to find some equilibrium because I was also vocal about, I still want to be promoted. I still want to be on like you know, asked for different opportunities and experiences, and I'm still killing it. Like, I'm still hitting goals, you know, so don't count me out.
Yeah.
And I think saying that directly also helped my, you know, my bosses as they evolved over the years, like, oh, she's all in. She's still in this. She's not checking out or doing less. So those are the top three things, right? Be open and honest, but also like set your boundaries, but then also don't forget to say the thing that you want to be true. Because if you don't tell your story about how you're navigating as a caregiver, they're going to create one for you, right? And it's not going to be the one that you want. Yeah. And so like, I knew that I had to tell my story for me to get the support that I needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What inspired you to share your journey publicly with the launch of When Career and Caregiving Collide?
It's with a mouthful, that brand, I guess.
With that brand, what you know, because a lot of times people give us our props for talking about our starting the podcast and telling our story in a public forum. And I'm curious, I always get curious to know for others, what inspired you to do this publicly? And I also want to know, did you have any reservations about doing so? And what is your hopes for sharing your journey publicly?
Yeah, no reservations. Probably because I'm a millennial and like we share everything. This is the age of like MySpace, Facebook, all the things, right? Yeah. So no reservations. There's a few reasons. One, I was a young Black girl, single, only child, and I did not see other young, not even just young, but just Black people sharing the story of what it meant to be a caregiver. So that's one. Two, people are like, oh, you're going through Alzheimer's, join this support group. You ever been to a support group 9 years ago before social media really began to take the space that it has now? A lot of those support groups are older, oftentimes white, family members who have like gone through their career, white picket fence, moved their loved one in with them. And you're like, oh, that wasn't my reality either. Right. And so I wanted to create the space for me to share and affirm the stories of us young single caregivers, to let people know that one, we're here, we exist. There's actually more of us than you think, because 1 in 4 millennials are caregivers. And right, like, regardless of how you identify, but I am going to be this young Black woman sharing our story, the joys, the frustrations, the trials and tribulations, so that you can feel seen, feel affirmed, and feel connected. Because I said this before, you know, navigating this is so lonely. And if seeing me on Instagram talk about my mom or sing to my mom or, you know, talk about how frustrating the medical system has been allows you to feel connected and like sparks more questions for you, than I've done my job. And that's been the whole intent.
Okay. There's a quote that says, sharing my journey as a caregiver so we don't have to feel so alone. We are in this together. I love this. And I think that's so powerful. And again, we always talk about it, how loss, death, sickness, it's all such isolating. For some reason, it's like the default is isolating. You know, we go into a shell and into a ball, and we kind of just close the door and on everyone, not only just mentally, but oftentimes physically. And I think that's one thing that we all can agree on. It's important to be able to open up and find that community and those people that can support you get through it, because it's not easy. And in your case, like you said, you're going on 9 years, you know, and I bet you when you were 22 or 23 or 24, you didn't expect this route for your life.
It wasn't on the vision board. Nope. It was not.
But I do love how you've embraced it, Jessica. And, you know, like I've said earlier, I feel for a lot of people, it really would have derailed them to a point where they could have lost themselves completely. And not only during the time, but for decades, you know. And I mean, I don't know you so well, but I can feel and I love how you're turning this into a moment of just positivity for you and what you're doing. I think it's beautiful. Now, one question I do have, and this is a question we always like to ask caregivers, is, do you find it challenging to find time to take care of yourself or for yourself? Have you found ways to implement self-care while you are doing this caregiving journey? Because that's also very important. So I'm curious to know if you found ways to do that. And if so, what do you do to take care of Jessica?
Yeah. You know, Audre Lorde has this quote, and I'm paraphrasing, but she basically says, you know, caring for myself is not self-indulgence. Caring for myself is an act of self-preservation. And it is absolutely critical that I prioritize Jessica all the while prioritizing my mom. And I say this as someone who did not, I don't have it perfect. I don't have it figured out, right? And there's some days where in true caregiver fashion, you put everyone's needs before your own. And then you're just like, oh, dang, I'm tired, right? Like, I'm exhausted. And so those moments do happen. But the thing I'll say for both myself and for those listening is that, you know, I think we've overused the term self-care, that we've almost made it more complicated than it needs to be, right? Like caring for yourself means being intentional with your time. So for me, that actually looked like, you know, waking up 30 minutes earlier so that I could have the quiet time before the craziness of caregiving happened. Or that meant saying, once my mom is asleep, I'm actually going to stay up the extra hour to get my TV shows in, or like, you know, have a glass of wine or whatever it is, read my book. I make intentional time for my own like meditations and reflections and prayer time every day. As you said in my bio, like I teach a fitness class at the YMCA 2 days a week, mainly to like one, get away, but two, the exercise, the endorphins helps. I think making intentional disciplined choices with meal prep and eating well, like nourishing your body is self-care, right? Like eating good foods for your brain health, obviously because dementia, but also just like for the longevity, that's self-care. I also think being mindful of the energies I have around me, both in people, what I consume, social media and the news, all of that is me taking care of myself. You know, I posted a few weeks ago, I was like, don't forget, and you mentioned this too, to make the doctor's appointment, go to the dentist, get your teeth clean. You know what I mean? Like make sure that you're okay. Because frankly, I'll never forget 2 years ago, I thought I was having a heart attack, but it was just, it was anxiety. But the way that that felt, I was like, oh no, if I leave, who's going to take care of my mom? And so since then I've been really intentional about making sure I slow down to have the little deposits. It doesn't have to be a big deposit. They can be little deposits each day to prioritize you. So that's what I do.
Got it.
That's great. April has a question. She says, Jessica, did you ever have a moment where you felt overwhelmed taking care of your mom? And what helped you to reset? Was it listening to music, reading, yoga, meditation, or just talking to someone?
All of that. I think I get overwhelmed, you know. That's a weekly occurrence, right? I cry every other day. Like that never goes away. I'll never forget being in my car after leaving the gym, being like, I didn't ask to be a caregiver. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like I'm like breaking down. And I had to like let it out. I had to say it, right? Like I had to release it so I wouldn't be holding it in. And once I released it, and then took the extra beat to take a walk around the neighborhood, you know, and like recenter that this was not my mom. What I was frustrated with was the disease. What I was frustrated with was how much was being stolen from us because of the disease. It helped me reframe and reset and get back into it. So yes, music, we're a big gospel music family. You know, I also appreciate if you can't get to a beach, get to some form of water. It could be your local river. Okay. Just go get to some streaming water to like cleanse that, which that helps for me. But then also, you know, I did have a group of core friends who I know held me down in so many ways to listen. And that helped reset as well.
Okay. It's great. Wow. As Sarah says, I'm a firm believer we cannot pour from an empty cup. Restorative intentions, you've got there, Jess. That's great. And then Sabrina says, I'm an occupational therapist and I'm specialized on dementia and stroke. It is the most beautiful job in the world. I work with the relatives, help them find better ways to deal with dementia. Biography work is a very large part of my work. You can heal childhood wounds. That's why I love my job so much. It's great that you take such good care of your mother. Unfortunately, that's not something that can be taken for granted. Love, Sabrina. I have another question for you, Jessica. What role has music played in your mother's treatment?
Mm-hmm. So my mom used to be the director of the gospel choir at our local church.
That's amazing.
And so, you know, I grew up going to choir rehearsal. I also sang growing up, and my father was also a singer. He died in 2020. And so music has just been a part of like how we communicate and connect. Mm-hmm. And so up until last year, my mother was still able to speak and sing, and we would sit on the couch and have our sing-along moments. That's just like who we were. And now I would say that my mother is fully bedbound, unable to communicate verbally. I now sing to her every day. And so I would say the music is the way in which, you know, I can still connect her to a part of who she once was. Mm-hmm. And even though she can no longer sing anymore, I see that face light up. I see her little toes moving, and that's how you know she's connected.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Caitlin says, thank you for being here and sharing your journey. You will continue to make a difference, not only for your mom, but also for other caregivers who feel alone in their situation. Yeah. She also says, what have you learned about yourself on this 9-year journey?
Thanks, Caitlin. I have learned, one, that I'm a freaking warrior. I am amazing. And I say this because anyone who's a caregiver, do not diminish the things that you have learned. Sure. You are a problem solver. You know how to navigate challenges. You can, you know, advocate and get what you want. You know how to influence people. Like, your resume is top notch just from being a caregiver. And I would say, for me, what I've learned about myself is that I can rise to any occasion and navigate whatever I am hit with, because I have the patience. I have the ability to ask questions, get really curious, and I have the ability to honestly like hold grace and space for other people. Nice. And I can see that really clearly about myself now, like 9 years later.
Got it.
Angela says, there is so much loss and loss. Loss of support is huge. Not only are we grieving our loved ones, but we lose support of emotional, physical, and even economically. My father-in-law died of this horrible disease. Their insurance company would not pay for extra care. Sending you gentle hugs, hun. Very sweet, Angela. And then Carol wants to let you know that your mom is beautiful. Very sweet, Carol. And
to that
then,
last point, sorry, could I say something
yes.
really fast?
Please, always.
Because I didn't actually answer it, and then her comment made me think, just the cost of caregiving. I think that's a thing that people forget, is that people are like, oh yeah, well, just doesn't Medicare cover? And you're like, no, Medicare doesn't cover anything when it comes to the cost of caregiving. Or they're like, well, we'll just put her on Medicaid. And it's like, she actually doesn't qualify. Not everyone qualifies for Medicaid. And then it's just like, you have to have the financial resources, and you're paying out of pocket for additional caregiver support. You know, I worked full time, and so I had to have someone here with my mom. And so what I want to elevate for your audience and people who might already be experiencing this is just, you know, I spend $40,000 off the top on caregiving cost alone a year out of pocket. And there's, you know, there's no extra support or people paying for that, but me, the family. And I'll never forget going to the Medicare office and asking, you know, Medicaid office asking for support. So I said, what happens when people don't qualify? And she says, well, families just exhaust their resources. And you're like, that's awful, you know, for the average working family, you know. And for me at that time, I was like 30. You're just like, I'm losing financial supports that I'm supposed to be having for myself, investing for Jessica, that are going into my mom. And so I just wanted to say, gosh, people don't realize those. It's not even hidden, but the extreme costs for just truly being able to show up at your job, be a good caregiver. Don't even talk about if I had kids of my own as a sandwich caregiver. And so just elevating that.
Great.
I thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
Very, very important. Jessica, we have one more question for you. Unless Taji had something else you wanted to ask, but you did talk.
No, I mean, it was the cost aspect, but you answered it.
Okay. So Jessica, I prepared you, or at least I informed you or warned you, however you want to see it, before we even went live, that we like to end our show with our guests getting the final kind of word. It could be on topic, be off topic. Really, the scope is wide open. Whatever you want to talk about, we'd love it for you to just give our community what's on your mind.
Thank you. I'll stay on topic. I've got a couple bullet points. I think the first is, if you are a caregiver that's listening, just acknowledging that you are doing the very best that you can. I think we often have this image in our head of what a caregiver is supposed to look like, what they're supposed to do. And honestly, you don't know what you don't know, but keep showing up, right? Keep trying. You might fail today, but get back up tomorrow and ask the questions to get what you need. And just believe that every day is a new day to be a better caregiver, and you truly are doing the best you can. And my second bullet point was just, you truly aren't alone on your journey as a caregiver or in your grief journey. And frankly, it is the people that you least expect that are going to show up for you. And release the expectation of all the people you think should be showing up for you, and be open to help and support from the folks that maybe you don't talk to very often, but have been following your journey, from the folks who might be in your local church or community organization, or heck, even people in social media. But like, being open about your story and asking for what you need will allow others to really pour into you and be open to receiving that. And then the final thing I'll just say is that if you have a loved one who is living with any form of dementia, is that they're still living. They're still here. They still feel your energy. They still feel and know what's happening around them, whether they can experience it or not. And so it is our job to create a thoughtful, honorable experience around them, to center their experience, to help them feel seen, valued, and whole. And if you do that as a caregiver, you are truly succeeding on this journey.
Nice. Wow. Well said. I love it. I love it, Jessica. Well said. Care and Thrive with Dr. Lana says, caregivers aren't recognized as a job, and so the advocacy really has to increase. We need more Jessicas. Couldn't agree with that more, Dr. Lana. Jessica, we need to know, how can people reach out to you, or how can people follow you? If you don't mind giving us some of those social media tags or your website, all that stuff would be great.
Yeah, website, jessicacguthrie.com. And then the best place to see me in social media is Instagram, which is at Career Caregiving Collide.
Great. And you also do Facebook, right? You have a Facebook? Sure.
Yeah, Facebook. That's connected to Instagram. Yes. That's when Career and Caregiving Collide.
And do you want to share this email address?
Sure, we can share that too. Go ahead and put the banner up.
Hey, it's up to you though. That's why I asked you. Yeah, it's okay?
It's fine. It's the same email that you'll get if you go to my website, and that's hello@jessicacguthrie.com.
Awesome. So what kind of emails, just so I know, I don't want people just emailing you for whatever reason, but what kind of emails would you expect to receive, or what's the kind of email someone should email you about?
Yeah, I think if you're interested in like partnerships or wanting to connect and build community from a caregiving perspective, that's one way. But then also I get a lot of emails from folks who are also on this journey who just want to share their story and connect. That's also okay as well.
Very good. Shauna says, thanks, Jessica. Adrian says, you're an amazing person, Jessica. Thank you for sharing. There's a lot more. Sarah says followed. I love that. And then there was one question that, or I should say, Tiffany says she should be a motivational speaker. I agree. And then there was a question that I didn't ask that I kind of wanted to ask. And this is it real quick. We'll touch on this, then we'll get going. But Dee's Tiny Kitchen says, how did you deal with the best interest making decisions for your mom? Thank you, Jessica. And I could elaborate on this for those who are having trouble, especially with something like Alzheimer's. And if you're doing it alone, as it seems like you primarily are, is there a little system you go through in terms of making some of these very challenging, tough decisions? What goes through your mind for that? Because I will say this, and I don't want to, put any more pressure on this, but you have 9 years in, you have a lot of experience. You're a very smart person, obviously. And, I really think you're a fine person to answer this question. So what advice would you have for someone who has to kind of make these decisions on their own. What advice would you have for them?
The first thing is a really like strategic thing is make sure you have your paperwork in order so that you can make decisions on behalf of your loved one. And so as soon as you realize that, like, especially when it comes to forms of dementia or anything, making sure you have a power of attorney. Are there living wills and trusts in place? Do you have the ability to speak on your loved one's behalf and make medical decisions, right? We forget about, we just think, oh, I'm the daughter, I can go do it. And you're just like, wait, no, CVS will stop you if you don't have the right paperwork. So there's that. And then I think, you know, my mom and I, we never had any sort of conversation about like what to do when certain things happen, but I have always kept her at the center in terms of like, what would my mom want to be true for her? Mm. How would she want people to know, or, you know, how people perceive her? And then also what is going to make her the most comfortable and allow her to thrive? And so, case in point, putting her on hospice, people think hospice is like, oh my gosh, she's about to die. Not necessarily, right? But I knew that I was done with the hospital. I was done with my mother being treated poorly, if like paramedics and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I no more poking and prodding and needles. Mm-hmm. I wanted my mom to like live her best life comfortably without all the extra stuff. And because I made that choice, homegirl's still living, right? And so it's again, prioritize what is best for your loved one, what is going to allow them to thrive and be their best selves for however long that might be. That has always been the driver behind the choices that I make in her health decisions.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Well answered. Her name is Jessica C. Guthrie. I can't, on behalf of my brother Taj and our entire foundation, we want to thank you so much for spending some time with us and our community and sharing with us about what you have learned in this caregiving journey you are on. Please don't be a stranger. Please come back whenever you want to. Our community loved you, and you are just a fountain of knowledge and experience that is, and your voice needs to be heard. So thank you so much, Jessica, for spending this time with us.
Thank you. It was so great to chat with you.
All right. I think that's it, Todd. I think we're good. So we will wrap up today's show. Jessica, again, thank you. Bow down to you. We're an amazing guest. So thank you so much. For everyone watching or listening, we will be back next Wednesday at 1 p.m. We will see you all then. Please have a great rest of your week. And adios, everyone. Bye.